When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, regarding the game itself, when the draw was first made, we looked to, first of all, the city we were going to, Hamburg. We hadn't been there before. We says, okay, this is an excellent opportunity for a great trip. Then, in terms of the football, we were saying, well, Hamburg haven't been doing so well in recent years as what they had when they were champions of Europe some 10 years back. So we fancied our chances. However, at the first leg at Celtic Park, we committed the cardinal sin in European football of conceding an away goal. But not only did we concede it, we conceded it at the 2 minutes of the game, which practically changed the whole course of the two ties overall. Because it had us chasing the game at home, which is what you don't want to be doing in European ties. Because we had such a strong accent on attack, we left ourselves vulnerable to many chances for Hamburg, and they converted one early in the second half to make it 2-0. So as we see here now, we're 2-0 down with the second half, so to speak, to go. But Celtic fans are eternal optimists, and I'm quite certain that when we leave the Volk Park Stadium next week, we'll have won 3-0. DeCandio and Chiedetti will score 2. So I fully expect that next week we will get the victory we're looking for. Because we don't go to see Celtic getting beaten. Although, in our heart of hearts, we're up against it. There's no doubts about it.
Sure, it's a grand old team to play for. Sure, it's a grand old team, be dead. When you read its history, it's enough to make your heart grow sad. God bless them, we don't care if we win.
Right through the latter half of the 19th century, Irish people continued to emigrate, fleeing the effects of the Great Famine. Many thousands went to Glasgow, where they congregated in the east end of the city. There were a lot of slums and a lot of deprivation. They were discriminated against and hated by the local Glaswegians because of their willingness to work for pay that undercut the local sort of rate. Some members of the Irish community saw that something was needed to give these people a focus, a sort of focus of identity.
They were settling in a country that had given birth to Presbyterian fundamentalism, Protestant religion, with John Calvin and John Knox and people like that had been born there. And straight away, when they began to settle and amalgamate into the community, they were alienated because of their religion and because of the fact that they were competing for the jobs that existed at the time. With the result that many of the Irish settlements, the areas that they had settled in, experienced poverty worse than what they had left home in Ireland. To alleviate the suffering, one of the Irish priests there, a chap called Andrew Cairns from Sligo, his religious name was Brother Walfred, got the idea of starting up a football club, because football at the time was beginning to grow in popularity in Britain. And he had seen the success of the Edinburgh Hibernian Club, who were formed from Irish immigrants as well. And he saw this as being a great way of raising funds with the intent of feeding the poor, particularly the children who were suffering the most. So Celtic really was formed to feed Irish children. That's basically where Celtic came from. And the essence of the club being an Irish club has been retained ever since.
Yeah, it's hard to rationalise why you get so much enjoyment out of 22 guys kicking a ball about. There's probably no sense to it. The only thing about it is, if we're crazy, then we're crazy along with millions of other people in the world, you know. And nearly every country in the world it happens. So there's more of us than there is of the other people, you know. that don't like football.
Football is an all-consuming passion for the people that play it and for the people that support it. It crosses all boundaries. It crosses all languages. It's one of the most simplest games to play. You only need a ball and two goals. Yet, it can capture people's imagination and their passions in a way like no other sport can. That probably is the reason why, from rich down to poor, from every type of nationality, creed, football is the most popular sport in the world. I think the passions engendered by football cannot be compared in any other sports. And taking that further, I have to say that the passions we feel for our team cannot be seen anywhere else either, or felt or imagined. So you'd have to support Celtic to know what I was talking about.
It's very important, and it hasn't waned. I mean, I don't think it ever will. You know, once you support Celtic, you tend to support them for life. It's that type of commitment, and most Celtic supporters would be the same.
At times, it's very, very hard for us to put our finger exactly on the pulse or on the reason or the whole essence of why we behave the way we do, why we're so fanatical about this club or what we consider to be a whole cause. But I suppose the best way I could put it is if somewhere along the line they decided that they were going to introduce an extra hour in the day, I think we dedicate that hour to thinking about Celtic like we do on the other 24.
Well, I have to admit that Celtic does play quite a large part in my thoughts from one day to the next. I mean, it's hard to say exactly how important they are. It's a difficult thing to quantify. On one level, you can say to yourself intellectually that it doesn't really matter if Celtic win or lose. It doesn't affect your daily life. It doesn't it doesn't make any difference about putting food on the table, but it does matter. At the end of the day, it does matter.
The Celtic supporters are different from certainly most other supporters. They'd be more loyal. They would identify more with their team. They would see themselves as sort of part of the same setup as the team. I think it was Alex Smith, the Aberdeen manager. He says, "When you go to Glasgow to play Celtic, you're not playing a football team. You're playing a cause, you know." And that's the way the Celtic support would see it. You know, that they were part of the cause as well as the team.
The fans are the club, and that will never change. The players, some of them are supporters, some of them know what the club is all about, and the other players that, you know, come up from England or from Italy, and that they obviously appreciate the fanaticism of the support, but they are only employees of the club at the end of the day. That's their work for them. We're out there, we're spending money week in, week out to support the club, to try and get the club on. No club in the world has a bond between its fans and the club itself like Celtic does. As I say, we're like one big family who stick together through thick and thin.
The Celtic supporters are very, very important to the club and to the team. And I think the best way you can realise this is when you see new players coming into Celtic, and I've noticed in the last couple of months, with particularly the likes of Alan Stubbs and Paolo Di Canio coming in from Italy, and they have been really taken in by the warmth and the enthusiasm and the love Celtic fans have for their team, be it home or away, or even training sessions. This is something they are not used to. And in a way too, it's a very comforting thing for them to feel such a bond with the people that literally pay their wages. We don't know how important supporters are to other clubs and other teams, but we don't particularly care because we look on ourselves as being unique. And we always will look on ourselves in that way. And at times we can feel patronised, but we do know that come the whistle at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, that the most important thing to the team is the 40,000 people that surround them.
Registration 9FE58. Please make your way back down to the car deck via the green stairs. That's the owner of a black
The old European noise, I suppose. I suppose for all clubs, especially, it's if you're playing against a team that you never normally play against. You know, different players, maybe. On occasions, like you're talking about maybe the Celtic played Juventus and all in the past, you're talking about big name players like Real Madrid and all these clubs, or Hamburg and such, haven't got any big names. But it's a break from the routine league games, like, you know, against Confer and Gibson. It's good to see these teams from other countries. And as far as you're going to the away leg, it's great to travel and see another country. Travelling with the Celtic part is great, you know. Great guys from all over England and Scotland, Wales and the continent as well. You meet them in pubs and they're all so proud to tell you of their Irish heritage, that their grandparents were from Mayo or their mother's from Kerry and all. It makes you feel really proud, you know, that you're Irish, and you feel like this club, it's not just something you chose to follow. It's part of your heritage, part of your culture. And you're amongst your own. They're singing our songs, it's our flag that they're proud to fly, you know. And a great boys.
Football really, in its essence, is about travelling and sitting at games and watching games and supporting the team. It's not about sitting in pubs shouting at television screens. It's really being there. It's eating the pies. It's drinking the bovril. And it's listening to these magical one-liners that you can only hear at football matches. You can't hear that in a pub. It just is not the same, and it never will be the same. And anybody who thinks that by sitting in front of a television screen in a pub and thinks they know about football really don't know what they're talking about. And they won't know that until they actively get involved in supporting football.
And the ball's in the net, and it's not just Cadet, that's the canyon, that's the canyon. When it's hit like a bomb, and it's not Andy Tom, that's the canyon, that's the canyon.
We went over when we were 18, and we were immediately hooked, because even before we attended a game, we went to a pub in the East End near Celtic Park. We'd failed to get any accommodation because there was a trade fair on in the city that weekend, and we went into a pub and, you know, we had a word with one or two of the locals, and word spread around the pub that there was 9 Irish guys looking for accommodation. Well, within 10 to 15 minutes, there was people actually arguing over who was going to take us, because they were all so eager to have an Irish guy back in our house. Each told us their Irish connections and how proud they were of it. And it was something else to see these people in a different country who had great-grandparents or ancestors who were from Ireland originally, and to see how they still clung to Irishness in a certain way, that they were proud of that fact. They realised they were Scottish, but they knew they were of Irish descent, and this was something very special to them. The lads that came with me, as I said, they supported Manchester United, Liverpool, all those English clubs, and after that weekend, during which Celtic beat Rangers 3-1, none of them have ever looked back since. They're all now Celtic fanatics like myself, season ticket holders, and they eat, sleep and drink any news, any information on the club.
And a classic collection of clothes and accessories for both women and men. Passengers are remanded, the duty-free awards remains one
day. Celtic, though, is that it has an extra thing other than the football, like, you know what I mean?
Has a community spirit, it's some sort of... But yeah, we point out what it is.
As I said,
It's a family. It's an inner feeling in people. You know what I mean? It's a feeling of belonging.
It's a way of life.
It's a way of life. There's no doubt about it. It's an obsession, an institution. Not a football team, you know. Institution.
I mean, there's a good question for you. How would you explain that to somebody
who didn't
understand?
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good question. I just asked them to come with me. I just asked them to come for the main question.
My answer was that was, though, be like somebody who's crazy about bees trying to tell you about their passion. You wouldn't understand it, but you'd respect
that
passion, you
know?
I mean?
You'd understand how they got a buzz over.
I give you that.
Give a joke, it's fun. What was that other one we were practicing during?
I don't find it at all difficult to understand how football supporters in Ireland can take an interest in Celtic. I mean, quite the opposite. I find it very hard to understand those who don't take an interest in Celtic, because Celtic supporters in Scotland think of Ireland as a kind of spiritual home by and large, and it's all part of the process that people in Ireland should support Celtic. So that it came as something of a shock to me when I came here first in 1976 to discover that there was actually more interest in Manchester United and Leeds and, you know, pretty insignificant teams like Tottenham Hotspur. But I think that the interest in Celtic has been rekindled over the past few years by the success of the Irish national team.
I think the Republic of Ireland's done a lot for football here, the team, over the last 10 years, and they've gave people a passion for supporting football. And I think as a result of that, they're better able to understand people like us that support a team like Celtic.
Certainly my immediate family in Edinburgh never had the slightest difficulty understanding anybody who supported Celtic. Their difficulty was quite the opposite. They couldn't understand why anybody might not support Celtic, because they always took a very close interest in it themselves. My family here, my wife, for instance, I think has come to appreciate it in a way that she perhaps didn't at first. She's got a pretty good interest in it at this point. And my daughters, I think, are 9 and 4. At the moment, they've really been brought up with this business of Celtic has really been part of the house probably as long as they can remember, and they have a particular fondness, particularly the younger one, for Pierre Van Hooijdonk. I think it has a lot to do with the name and the strangeness of the name, because for the 4-year-old in particular, the name really does sound quite funny, and she doesn't always quite understand the difference between Celtic and Pierre, because she knows to ask if Celtic have won, which is a pretty good question, but I'm not quite sure how to answer her when she asks if Pierre has won, and I think that she's certainly getting there all the same. My older daughter had the same kind of difficulty at the same age with Jackie Jackanowski. She thought this was a hilarious name, Jackanowski, who played for Celtic when she was quite small, and I think it was probably one of the first words actually that she learned to say, one of the first difficult words.
My girlfriend Caroline, it's probably all down to me, but she detests soccer totally, and Celtic in particular. Any mention of Celtic in the house is met with a flying slipper or something like that, but she's coming around slowly, and I've brought her over to a few games, and she appreciates that that it is important to me, and she has made a lot of friends with my Scottish friends and down the years, and I think that someday she'll be fully converted like me.
Your father would be the catalyst really for making you support. Once they take you along to football matches, you'll tend to support the club that they support. It's the same with me. My sons now support Celtic, you know, and they travel over to the games. And I'm pleased about that, you know. Morocco.
Well, the first memories of taking an interest in Celtic aren't really there, because taking an interest in Celtic was something that was always around at home. It was always something in the air, and I can't really remember a time when I wasn't looking out for Celtic results, or being told what Celtic results were, or you know, just being aware generally of the fact that Celtic existed, and you know, being concerned about them. But the first game that I can remember going to was a game against Hibs at Easter Road, sometime in the late 50s. I'm really not very sure when it was, around about 1958. And my memory of that game is of seeing Bobby Evans, pointed out. And I suspect people like Peacock were playing as well at that stage, but I can only actually remember Evans. And I'm told that, that I spent much of my time looking around and not actually following the game, but I do have a clear memory of it.
My favourite Celtic player of all time would be Bobby Lennox. He played in the team that won the European Cup in 67, and indeed played on until the 1981 season, thus having played in the 60s, 70s and 80s. He was my favourite player for a very simple reason. As a kid, and trying to find out all the information on Celtic I could, I went into the local newsagents and had a peek in at the Sunday Mirror. I think it was the Sunday Mirror. They used to give the team lineups from the day before, from the games the day before, and Lennox was one of the few names which I could read from the Celtic lineup. So although I didn't know his first name, I went out on the street and playing football with the other kids, and I was Lennox, Lennox of Celtic. And this was something that always stuck with me. And I loved, in future years and the years after that, I loved looking at videos of Bobby, even though I'd never seen him play in the flesh. He was a superb player. His nickname was Buzz Bomb, because he was so fast and so nippy around the box. Scored a lot of goals. Bobby Charlton was actually a big fan of Bobby Lennox's. It was a dream come true for me then in 1992, when I got the chance to meet Bobby on the weekend of the 25th anniversary of Celtic winning the European Cup. We brought the team over to Dublin, and I found him to be a very humble man, and he made me feel like, you know, I was on a par with him. I was just a Celtic man, whereas maybe some other big name players might have, you know, said, "Oh well, you know," and sort of brushed you off. But Bobby was excellent, and I'll always be a Bobby Lennox fan. He was my first contact with Celtic, and the first name I knew. And even today, when I play football in the local Astor Park, I always have it in my mind that I'm Bobby Lennox of Celtic on the ball.
That's T.J. Feetwell. It's Lennox. Oh, glorious goal. Oh, Lennox, what a goal. Three Rangers players looking very disconsolate. Lennox suddenly switching feet and leaving Ritchie with not an earthly of a chance of that.
In my memory, I don't really have an all-time favourite Celtic player that I could say would stick out my mind, that I could boast about, like maybe the fans of the 60s and 70s could. But if there's a player I've read about and a player I've heard about, I think my greatest regret is never having seen Charlie Tully play. Because having so many friends as I do in the north that travel to games, a lot of them would be young enough now to remember them. And I've had many a long chat with people talking about previous Celtic teams and the love that they had for Charlie Tully. He to them, typified everything a Celtic player should be. He was adventurous, he was brave, he was very, very skillful, he was clever. He was a Celtic man through and through. He was an Irish man through and through. And to those people, he was a very, very special person and a player. And when I almost feel jealous at times when I hear them talking about him, because, you know, you feel as though you've missed out on something that was really, really special.
Well, Celtic's official allocation was 3,800, and Celtic fans being what they are, that allocation was obviously snapped up. All those tickets are gone. But that wouldn't be taking account now of people who travel independently to get tickets over here. It wouldn't be taking account of the guys based on the continent who will probably make their own range for tickets. I reckon there could be anything from 6,000 to 7,000 Celtic fans here tonight. And that's given the fact that we're 2-0 down. That's a phenomenal support, you know. Phenomenal. Well, it's what we come to expect from following Celtic. That's what Celtic fans are about. We love our club and we'll be there regardless.
Okay, well, now it's Tuesday morning of 24th of September, the day of the game. And at the moment, we're just stopped at a roadside service station in Germany. It's in a place called Munster. And we expect that once we're up and running here, we've another 4 hours to go and we'll be in Hamburg. The atmosphere now is a bit sleepy because we've had a long journey through from Calais this morning. And I think once we get on the road now this morning, I think the atmosphere is going to pick up with the pre-match excitement, so to speak. So I expect that as soon as we're up and running now, they've all had a bit of breakfast and that, and they're all beginning to wake up now. I think the excitement will definitely start building once we start heading towards Hamburg, particularly when we get there.
This season is very important for us because should Rangers win the league, they will equal our world record of 9 league championships in a row, and this is unthinkable for us. It just can't be allowed to happen. Whatever it takes, Fergus McCann and Tommy Bowens must ensure that this team is good enough to stop Rangers winning the league, because after the European Cup, the 9 league championships in a row from 67 to 74 is something which is very, very important to every Celtic fan, and to have it taken away from us now by our main rivals, by our deadliest rivals, Rangers, would be a sickening blow indeed.
Well, the rivalry between Celtic and Rangers is based historically on the fact that Celtic very quickly became identified as an exclusively Catholic team in a way which the founders of the club had mostly not wished. You know, the name Celtic was chosen rather than Hibernian or Shamrock or Harp, and there were other clubs with these names, in order to indicate that the founders wanted a kind of unified Scottish-Irish approach. But they became identified very early on exclusively with the Catholic side in Scotland. And others responded to this, and Rangers became identified exclusively with the Protestant side, and that's the essence of the rivalry historically. I mean, it has very unpleasant overtones of the Northern situation.
Celtic supporters, by their nature, are good-natured supporters, and for the majority of games that we play in during the year, that comes through very clearly. Except when we play Rangers, which is a game that is moreover obsessed with bitterness and hatreds that obviously go back a very, very long time and have repercussions far beyond football pitches. That is something I'm not going to change, or anybody connected with Celtic or Rangers is going to change, because that is a problem that is very, very deeply rooted within Glasgow, first of all, and to a greater level, Scotland and Ireland. So I would have to say that the atmosphere, while some people would, it's no doubts about it, it's a fantastic atmosphere as a spectacle, but when you really understand what's going on, it is quite poisonous, and it's not good, because as I said, it brings out the worst in the Celtic support, and we are actually bigger than the behaviour that we would go on with at Celtic Rangers games. They're the most frustrating games of all when we lose, but they're the most that it's the greatest feeling in the world when we win. So in one way, I'm probably being hypocritical in saying all that, but at the same time too, it has to be said, I don't think Celtic fans particularly are proud of themselves, what the emotions that they go through when we play that team.
Well, I think supporting any football club, probably anywhere in the world, is tribal, you know. Not just Celtic or Rangers. It's probably more so Celtic and Rangers, where the tribes are easily identified, you know. It's our gang against your gang, or our clan against your clan, or our town against your town, or village against village, and that's what makes football. the rivalries make it. If the rivalries weren't there in football, you would have 40,000 people all agreeing with each other. There'd be no atmosphere. You need the divisions. You need the rivalries. Suppose it's this street playing against the kids from the next street. The rivalries are there in any football anywhere in the world. There's a romance about Celtic that travels more so than a lot of other clubs have done, you know. I think it's the underdog, the immigrant underdog coming into a country and winning out and achieving against all the odds. I think that has, you know, people have seen that end and identified with it.
Well, I'd reckon there's a number of factors involved in why Celtic are so well known and supported around the world. I think first of all is the visual image. It's the green and white hoops, and I think that's very, very unique. Although there is clubs, of course, that wear hoops, you know, Shamrock Rovers and Queen's Park Rangers. Now, I think Celtic cornered that market a long time ago, and are almost definitely the first club to be recognised because of the strip that they wear. Secondly, I think winning the European Cup in 67 with the style of play as they did went a long way to winning over a lot of people. I mean, for example, Sporting Lisbon wear the exact same strip as Celtic now because of the effect the Celtic fans had on the city of Lisbon when they were there in 1967. I mean, Lisbon changed their strips to replicate Celtic's green and white hoops because of the style of the team and the warmth to the fans as well, which was very important to the people of Lisbon. And also too, there's a romance about Celtic that because of the origins and because of the hardship that the people who formed the club went through and the hardship that many people who support Celtic went through, you know, through the 40s and the 50s, through really chronic times in Britain, right through this century, that despite all that, they have a resourcefulness and a good-humoured approach that, like, is almost typical of just Celtic supporters.
Yeah, Celtic have links with a lot of clubs around Europe. You know, towns or cities where we've played, the Celtic support has had such an effect on the support of the local team that they've almost adopted Celtic, as it were, as their second club. I suppose the best example of this is St. Pauli in Germany, the smaller club in Hamburg, and their supporters are fanatical about Celtic, and they're to be seen in large numbers at Celtic home games on a regular basis. And it's great to see, you know, it's great to see Celtic with supporters from other countries who would previously have known nothing about us until we went and played there.
Right, well, we've finally arrived in Hamburg at long last. By the way, I've been itching to crack a joke to the lads. If I can paraphrase the immortal lines of John F. Kennedy. Ich bin ein Hamburger.
Der Michel von Hamburg, von Stürmen umweht, hoch über St. Pauli, wie schön
Nummer 17. Okay, Nummer 17, which
just
way?
Just ring.
The key's in the room. John, you're in with Bernard, right?
It's Bernard.
Bernard. All right, Bernard, right? Number 31.
Well, after the usual problems that we encounter in finding a hotel, we managed to get there on schedule at 1 o'clock. After everybody got checked in and got sorted out, we have everybody now out at a pub called the Irish Rover, which is just based around the city centre here in Hamburg. So this is it now. This is the beginning of the pre-match build-up. At the moment, now we're going to make our way across to the St. Pauli Supporters Club and talk to a few people over there about why they have such a fascination with Celtic.
My name is Matthias. I'm from Mülheim an der Ruhr, which is near Cologne. I live in Freiburg, and I'm a St. Pauli supporter for about 5 years now. And, well, how did I come to support Celtic? I noticed that many St. Pauli supporters have Celtic scarves and stuff. And about earlier this year, about Easter time, I went to Glasgow for some late holidays, and I didn't get tickets for the Old Firm match on Easter Sunday, but I watched it in a pub, and in a Celtic pub in Glasgow, and I was so well accepted, and I had fun all the way. And of course, I just said I'm a St. Pauli fan. I was there with my brother, who's also a St. Pauli fan, and we watched it on Sky. I think it was Sky. And we had fun all the way. And since then, I always look at the results, and that's why I'm here. And I even went to one game of the preseason tour in Holland at Borculo, the first game, 16-0 game. That was fun too. I just went there alone because I know I can always have fun with Celtic supporters. Just have a good time.
Yeah, 1993, I have see a football play. Celtic with Glasgow, and only Celtic fans, and all people say for me, "Hey, good friend, hey, good friend." And it's a business. It's a great
mood.
Great mood, and I have because I it's a Celtic, it's all right.
It all started a few years ago when my colleague Sven traveled over to Scotland. And he told us about Celtic, about the club, about the ideas. And it's not only the club, it's also the idea against fascism, because St. Pauli supporters started in Germany the movement of football supporters against fascism, against Nazis. And we heard about the same ideas in Glasgow, so that brought the two fan groups together.
Er wird erstmal der Österreicher im HSV treffen, nämlich Schupp ganz kräftig von den Weingold. Da gibt's auch gleich die erste gelbe Karte durch Schiedsrichter Martin Schupp, der da durchgegriffen hat gegen Marky McKay, der neue Mannschaftsmann.
He's got Malcolm Mackay snapping at his heels, gets past him, pushes it onto Kimmich, and he's brought down there by Alan Stubbs. And it's Malcolm Mackay, it's a red card. Oh, it was out Malcolm Mackay, dear, oh dear, a disaster for Celtic. Well, that challenge from behind, I thought it was Alan Stubbs. And the challenge on number 7, Kimmich,
Here's a great chance, the ball comes through towards Beron, and the linesman is giving a goal. That clearly looked offside, but Beron has put the ball in the net. He broke through there. He looked to be at least 3 yards offside. But the big number 9 put the ball in. And Celtic...
this particular saying now, hit the noises. What have been trying to say about the Celtic Park? Here we are. We're in Germany. We're 3-0 down in aggregate. We've 9 players on the park. We've got to score 3 goals and stop Hamburg from scoring again to go through. There's 5,000-6,000 Celtic fans here. Scarves raised above the head saying you'll never walk alone. You know, that's what makes us different.
And a
up is an ordering off here. Another red card, this time for John Hughes, who's going to be sent off. Now, the Germans claim their players in trouble. The Celtic players are all around the referee. Paolo Di Canio incensed about the decision to send off John Hughes, who brought down one of the German players. I think it's Carsten Baron who's down. John Hughes...
In the space of 10 seconds, we hit the bar. Within inches of equalising. And then we had a man sent off for what looked like another extremely dodgy decision by the referee. I think the referee's going to lose control of this game now. Celtic's tempers are up. There's no doubt about it. We're playing with 9 men. Oh my, I don't know. The unfortunate thing was we were playing very well. We didn't look out of the game even with the 10 men. Had that shot, the Canio shot went in instead of hitting the bar. The whole didn't ball game.
Germans break, no offside. Great chance in on Marshall and it's a goal. Andre Breitenreiter strides in. Celtic 9-man defence were caught wide open. And Breitenreiter really stole in there and placed it low past Marshall. Breitenreiter scores. Hamburg 2-0 in the night. And the aggregate score rises to 4-0.
Und Andre Breitenreiter nahm die Kugel herunter, konnte sich fast die Ecke aussuchen und schoss hier ein ins lange Eck zum 2-0. Natürlich die endgültige Entscheidung hier im Volksparkstadion von 30.000, das ist die offizielle Zuschauerzahl, die natürlich zufrieden sind und jetzt hoffen, dass der HSV noch ein bisschen was rausgeht.
Well, we were always up against it after the first leg being 2 goals down. Well, I think it wasn't helped tonight by the fact the referee was clearly intimidated by the home crowd and gave very soft decisions in favour of HSV. And that made the job even harder. Sending 2 men off for us, dubiously sending 2 men off. 1 goal blatantly offside as well. It may sound like bias as usual from us, but that's the way we're looking at the moment. We're badly done here tonight. Not to say that if those decisions hadn't been made, I'm not saying we would have won the game by any means, but it certainly didn't make it any easier for us. But now we celebrate anyway, because that's the type of support we are. We celebrate just being who we are. You know, the result now will pale into insignificance, because we'll just celebrate being Celtic supporters. That's the most important thing of all.
If you enjoyed this documentary, you might like to listen to our other Documentary on One productions. Visit rte.ie/docon1.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.